Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Imprint Companion. Yes, this is a podcast where two disc freaks unpack every release from the amazing boutique Blu-ray label in Australia, Imprint Films. I am one half of your hosting team, Blake Howard, and joining me is my co-host, but also the co-star of the incredible Refuse Classification Show and The Last Video Store. It is Alexi Toliopoulos. Welcome back.
Greetings, Blake, and greetings to all the Imprint heads out there listening to the program today.
It's good to see you. We're a little bit behind schedule, only because Lexi has been doing his amazing live show across Australia. So we're back together.
Across the entire nation. Both coasts will be hit by the end of this tour.
Across the nation. So we're covering the Imprint bundle from March, which was a banger. We're going to read out all the titles. There's one we are going to miss in our review. So we'll cover all of them now. The list is Man Bites Dog, Savior, Shattered Glass, In the Bedroom, The Weight of Water, and Factory Girl. And so we're going to spin the disc on Factory Girl first, last in the list, but first on ours. So have a listen to the trailer and we'll come back and talk about it.
That's her. That's Edie Sedgwick.
Well, I would sure love to work with her. I've never seen a girl with so many problems.
I am entirely superficial, and I intend to stay that way. But you, my dear, you are the real thing. America's next it girl.
Well, hello.
Baby, your friend is a bloodsucker, you know that? You're his prop, okay? You're disposable to him.
I hate him! No one will have anything to do with me because of you. It's your factory!
I wonder if people are gonna remember us.
What, when we're dead?
Yeah.
Well, I think people will talk about how you changed the world.
I wonder what they'll say about you.
My lifeline is broken. I know I won't live past 30.
Factory Girl, this tragic biographical drama comes from the award-winning director behind the documentary Hearts of Darkness, A Filmmaker Apocalypse, George Hickenlooper. Sienna Miller stars as It Girl Edie Sedgwick. Guy Pearce stars as Andy Warhol, and the stunning supporting cast features Hayden Christensen, Jimmy Fallon, Mina Suvari, Mary-Kate Olsen, and Mary Elizabeth Winston. Edie hailed from a wealthy aristocratic American family when she met Andy Warhol. It became a mad rush for fame and fabulousness that was destined to spin out of control. Now, I saw this movie back on its original release, Blake, and it's always had a little bit of a soft spot in my heart. What was it like coming to Factory Girl in 2025?
Lex, I'm like you. I saw this back when it came out, but coming back to it now, it's a really exceptionally well-made movie. Like, the craft is good. The aesthetic is great. The alternate textures of the different film stocks, because George Hickenlooper, who's got an origin point in documentary filmmaking, uses lots of different stocks to show, you know, Andy Warhol's footage that he's shooting versus the footage that he's shooting in real time versus some sort of tricks to, you know, span across time, because it's kind of been told as like a little bit of out of order storytelling, biographical sort of tone. And what really just shocked me, because at the time, I think there was this weird, like, do you remember this like weird aversion to Sienna Miller becoming like the new It Girl? Like there was kind of like this butting against it.
I always loved her. I always thought she was very cool.
She was fantastic. That's what stuck out. I was like, oh my God, she's excellent. There is not a hint of that really great, you know, her native British accent that you see in things like Layer Cake and things like that. There's none of that. It's just this terrific performance as Edie Sedgwick. Guy Pearce loves, like, he's like, he's got a love for weird guys and weird little voices like Tom Hardy, but he's just not allowed to play in that arena as much as Tom Hardy. And so I was like really getting into it, and it just flew by. It kind of maybe was more confronting or more crazy when it first came out. And I feel like a lot of that has deadened. It doesn't feel as like explosive as it maybe once did. But I certainly had a terrific, terrific time like going back to it. And without it kind of being a mind-blowing thing for me, I relished it. And the first thing that I did was going back into the special features of this disc. There's called Building the Factory, Crafting Andy Warhol's World. And it was an interview with the production designer, Jeremy Reed, which is a new one. And it was just excellent to watch, like, you know, this really great movie that came out in 2006, this good movie that came out in 2006, right in that Nexus zone before, like, you know, where you're using real sets, where you're using real tactile locations, where you're having to create everything on the screen. And it was still in that nice point. We hadn't quite eclipsed into like we'll just recreate everything, and so it was really nice to sort of hear him call back and say like the sets were a part of the personality of the movie. So I had a good time revisiting it. Was like again just like a nice, you know, one of the last video store movies, and it's kind of out of fashion, this kind of biopic.
The one thing I always remembered about this film was for some reason, they couldn't name Bob Dylan. So yes. Hayden Christensen is obviously playing Bob Dylan, but the characters, they never just say his name.
They never say his name. They make
him a little bit more enigmatic or something.
Yeah, it's almost like they were asking permission to even use his name moniker as a license, and they don't do it. But it's funny, yeah. It's a double Hayden Christensen month which we're bookending the show with, which is funny.
And of course, currently Revenge of the Sith is doing very well in the cinemas. So
25 million in its opening week. It's the most lucrative re-release of any movie ever, which is insane.
It's whack. Good on them. Good on you, Hayden.
Yeah, I love you, Hayden. We loved you back then when you were prematurely ejaculating in movies like Life is a House and playing the unnamed Bob Dylan in Factory Girl. But I will
never forget that scene from Life in a House. And I thought I never would, but it was dormant in my brain for many years until you refreshed it.
Oh, well, I'm so glad I could be of some service. Now let's go back probably to, I mean, there's arguably two kind of flagship titles in this batch, but let's go to the lead off, the big hitter in this batch. One that we've had lots of, we had lots of pings for us when I shared it on social media that we were going to be talking about it. It is 1992's Man Bites Dog. Have a listen to the trailer.
Tu vois, il y a un barème quand tu laisses un corps, c'est-à-dire tu fais trois fois son poids, normalement un homme moyen comme cette victime-ci, c'est trois fois son poids. Mais sinon, par exemple, ça change, hein. Tu as pour les enfants ou pour les nains, ça change. Pour un enfant, il est plus léger, un enfant, hein. C'est deux fois son poids. C'est quatre fois son poids. Comment ? Non, parfois, par exemple, pour les nains, c'est une fois son poids. C'est beaucoup plus lourd, hein. Les os sont beaucoup plus lourds chez un nain, donc c'est une fois le poids. Une vieille dame, par exemple, ou un vieil homme, cinq fois le poids. Les os sont poreux déjà, hein. L'amour laisse comme une traînée de soufre derrière lui, comme une odeur qui traîne. Et que malgré tout, dès que tu rencontres quelqu'un, tu sens, un peu comme quand tu vas pisser et que tu sens tes doigts.
Man Bites Dog, the full uncut version of the cult classic Belgian crime mockumentary, blends comedy and gritty graphic realism and is regarded as the inspiration for Quentin Tarantino's Natural Born Killers. Our film crew follows a ruthless thief and a heartless killer as he goes about his daily routine. But complications set in when the film crew lose their objectivity and begin lending a hand. This controversial film was written and produced and directed by student filmmakers Remy Belveau and André Bonzel and Benoit Paul Verde, I probably butchered that one, and shot on black and white 16mm film on a shoestring budget. It received a bunch of acclaim from film festivals around the world, including Toronto and Cannes, and it's had a legacy amongst critics and fans since its release in 1992. Lex, this is one I saw way back when, but you've more recently caught up with it than me. Tell us about Man Bites Dog.
I think this is a very special film for me. I saw it first when I would have been in film school, and because I've always been in that documentary and especially documentary hybridity, I've always been fascinated by faux documentaries. And I think this is one of the best examples to discover faux documentary that is just a little bit outside of the more mainstream mockumentary comedy space.
Yes.
This is a mockumentary. This is a comedy. It is also aping the documentary format. But the effect of doing so is really disturbing, because this is a documentary about like a serial killer, basically, is what they're showing you. And I think that I hadn't seen it for quite some time, maybe like 10 years. So it was quite a pleasure to revisit it, because I find it quite, in an odd way, as disturbing it is, as it is, I think its commitment to its form I find quite inspiring.
Yes.
And I definitely never thought I'd ever see it on Blu-ray. Like, this was just one of those movies I never thought I'd ever see in high definition. So I was very excited when I saw Imprint was putting it out. I think that it looks pretty freaking great in Blu-ray. That's, like, you
16
know,
mil surprisingly looks amazing when it's like properly scanned, and it does look really great.
Like, I could imagine looking better, but like, whoever would, you know? Like, it's a it's a cult film from that was made by film students at the time. So I think it also deserves some of that like raw energy of like, you know, its imperfections and stuff. Really, really enjoyed watching this. I have yet to kind of go through the special features of everything, but there is like a documentary attached to it called Man with a Movie Camera, Found Footage Legacy of Man Bites Dog. I'm very keen to kind of get into that and also the short film that's on there. I would say this works really well in companion with the Australian film The Magician, that is also a faux documentary about an assassin or gangland killer that is then became the TV series Mr. In-Between like a decade and a half later from Nash Edgerton. I think that, I think they would pair very well together, and you can definitely see the kind of like inspiration from one to the other. But I really, really enjoyed this new release of Man Bites Dog.
Unreal. Very keen to check it out. I haven't seen it in a million years, and I reckon I saw it on maybe a VHS tape was probably the last time. And it actually, speaking to a VHS showcase of a 16mm film, it was probably a perfect showcase of that. I haven't seen it in a million years, but I'm very excited to check it out. And yeah, the doco for sure. Great shout to The Magician and Mr. In Between, a terrific Australian show. Love it to pieces. All right, we're now on to our third film. Why don't you guys have a listen to the trailer of Catherine Bigelow's The Weight of Water.
There are times in your life when you sense that something is about to happen.
This is my husband, Thomas.
Hi.
Hey. Hey.
Too long.
And at the same time, you realize it already has.
Two women were discovered in the kitchen, strangled and bludgeoned with an axe. Isn't bludgeon a wonderful word?
One of the best.
This must be the kitchen, right? Have they found the bodies?
Using an axe requires intimacy. Think about how close you have to be to your victim.
I would do anything to have you.
I think the killer was in love with one of the women. The murder was the only way he could possess her.
Love is never as ferocious as when you think it's going to leave you.
I like that.
Thomas!
I'm innocent!
You know he killed a girl.
Thomas killed a girl.
Talent excuses cruelty. Don't you know that?
I can't do this.
What's going on?
I probably read too much into things.
Hold me, please. Keep me to the house.
Though they sink through the sea, they shall rise again.
The Weight of Water.
Cool. The Weight of Water from the year 2000. Academy Award-winning director Kathryn Bigelow brings the true story of the 1873 Smutty Nose Island murders onto the big screen in this thrilling crime drama starring Catherine McCormick, Elizabeth Hurley, Sean Penn, and Sarah Polley. A newspaper photographer researches an 1873 double homicide and finds her own life paralleling that of a witness who survived the tragic ordeal. It's based on Anita Shreve's 1997 novel of the same name. Now, this is a film that, suffice to say, Blake, normally was never on my radar. I'd never heard of it, never knew of its existence, especially considering it's from one of the great filmmakers of modern times. That is such a surprise. So what did you discover, like, finding this movie for the first time and watching it? What is there?
It's weird to think of Kathryn Bigelow, who is such a visceral filmmaker. I was trying to, like, get into the mindset of what was the big appeal. And I think the appeal is parallel stories. And I think the appeal is the unexpected. And I think the appeal is, like, the co-protagonists being played by both Catherine McCormick and Sarah Polley in these parallel times, having deeper and darker traumas and experiences that influence their perspective on the world, and watching how they both were both revealed more about those characters as the stories progress, and then have to contend with everything they've seen because they're not necessarily reliable perspectives. So it was a really interesting one to have a look at. It's very well made. Like, it's shot on location. There's a lot of boats and islands and in that sort of specific part of, you know, sort of Eastern America, that kind of like Jaws adjacent region, you know, like you're on the water, you're on these little islands, you're way back in 1873 when it feels like very provincial and feels like much quainter living than this sort of contemporary stuff. But she's playing with these characters all over the place, and there's these doubles, and then there's these kind of relationships about, you know, being in a relationship and looking sort of longingly to someone else while you're centered in your relationship. And I think it was more just like a challenge of, can I tell this story? I think that that's probably what was the most exciting thing for her watching it. And I think she does quite a good job. It doesn't, there's just still something about it that, I don't know if the resonances between times work as much as they want to. I don't know what it is, or if it's the actors themselves. I don't know what it is. Sean Penn is an extremely aloof kind of performance in this movie. Elizabeth Hurley is, you know, an object of affection, and there's objects of affection in both timelines. I think Sarah Polley is really good, but, you know, I think we can both agree that Sarah Polley, as good as she is as an actor, she's an absolutely unbelievable director. And so she's very much found herself in that. And I was kind of thinking about how cool it was that she got to work with another great female director, Kathryn Bigelow, and wondered how much that had an influence on her. While I could appreciate lots of the stuff in this movie, it was just kind of like, I understand kind of why it escaped radar, because it kind of is a kind of under the radar movie. It feels like a curio in her resume, because it's not as forthright and so it's confronting. It does center these great female protagonists in two multiple timelines and them going through, but you're left wondering. I don't know if the one side of it is tilted and they're doing sort of lots of metaphorical comparisons, but I don't know if they really connect. So I watched this movie. It was definitely interesting. It had my attention, but it was one of those ones where it was like, huh, this is like a lost relic. And it was nice to complete my Kathryn Bigelow thing. I don't know if it's going to be more than that as far as an imprint release, then for those, you know, we talk about whether a whole batch is worthy of purchase. I really think that if The Weight of Water sells and sells well, it is about those folks out there who, like you and I, adore Kathryn Bigelow and are like, we need to have all of her films on our shelf, because otherwise we feel incomplete, you know? So that's kind of where I landed on The Weight of Water.
Well, Strange Days 4K, let's cross our fingers and hopefully that comes through one day from imprint.
Oh, man, there is no reason why that movie should not have a 4K, never-ending story level, like, crazy treatment. Like, that movie rules and rules and rules. You only have to,
comes as a headset that you pop onto your head and that's how you experience the movie.
100%, I agree. Yes, 10 out of 10. Like, copyright TM Lexi Toliopoulos on that one. Let's Let's jump to our next film in the batch. Another one from a really great filmmaker who's made a film very recently, Todd Field, the director of Tar. This is his 2001 absolute explosive breakout, In the Bedroom. Have a listen to the trailer.
There are things of which I may not speak. There are dreams that cannot die. There are thoughts that make the strong heart weak and bring a pallor into the cheek.
You get more than two of these in the bedroom, and chances are something like that's gonna happen.
Should we do something?
I've had lots of girlfriends, and I don't understand why this one is any different.
Oh, God, you don't think he wants to...
Oh, he's not gonna marry her.
Well, then what's he doing with her?
She probably loves him.
Girls always have.
You know, I've been ignoring our difference in age, but you keep playing with those blocks. She's not divorced yet, you know.
It's the same thing.
Maybe he still loves her. This is stopping now.
Oh, really?
Well, what's to stop him from doing it again?
Did you hit him at all? Come on, tell me you hit him.
Matt.
Just so he doesn't do it again.
You take my house, and you take my kids. I'm here. I'm here now, it's all right. I'm not going anywhere.
Ah! Go upstairs!
You encouraged him. You can't admit the truth to me or to yourself.
I know what you think, that I was too lenient, that I let him get away with
everything!
Done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
All right, award-winning auteur director Todd Field made his feature film debut with a box office smash, In the Bedroom, a devastating drama starring Sissy Spacek, Tom Wilkinson, Nick Stahl, and Marissa Tomei. A New England couple's college-age son dates an older woman who has two small children and an unwelcome ex-husband. Based on the 1979 short story Killings by Andre Debus, the film was nominated for 5 Academy Awards and 3 Golden Globes, described as one of the best directed films of the year by Roger Ebert, and a masterpiece that is most evocative, the most mysterious, the most inconsolably devastating by David Edelson of Slate Magazine. Lex, tell us about Todd Field's debut, which I remember seeing a very long time ago. Tell us all about it.
Well, I must agree with my peers, Ebert and the guy from Slate Magazine.
David Edelson, yes.
Yes, I must agree with my peers there, because and my contemporaries, because I think this really is such a spectacularly directed film. Just a deeply, deeply moving adult drama. The kind of film that when you're watching it, you do think, gosh, it's crazy that a film like this used to be big box office draws and be an actual hit for a film that's so adult and so adept at kind of how it interacts with human emotion on a really complex level and talks to stuff that is quite grisly, but also just complex. Like, how do you navigate these things? I remember when this came out, and it was like quite ever present, and especially it was that performance of Marissa Tomei that I remember getting a lot of attention, receiving an Academy Award nomination. Going back and watching it now, every performance is of that caliber. Every performance is incredible. Tom Wilkinson maybe has never been better. Incredible performance between him and Sissy Spacek as like a pair. Just really, really work well as a pair. Mr. Tomei, one of my favorite actors of all time, maybe her best performance outside of like My Cousin Vinny. Like, it's just like a really tremendous, really. It
just shows her range, right? Shows her range because she's phenomenal in this movie. And My Cousin Vinny, she's using all those other comedic muscles, but her timing is impeccable here. She's spectacular. She's so naturalistic. It's awesome. Like, you can't get this character out of your head. And it was at the time where you're like, as a breakout for Todd Field, you know, it's made in 2001. He's worked most recently with Stanley Kubrick. They had an amazing mentoring relationship. And he was part of Eyes Wide Shut. And that kind of emboldened him to go on this journey as himself as a filmmaker. And when he came out of it, it was like people were just blown away. And we thought, oh, well, here's a new guy. And it's only now, you know, In the Bedroom, 2001, Little Children, 2006, and then Tar in 2022, actually. So it's really fascinating to see that he didn't end up sort of going on and making a stack more movies, because all of those movies are extremely well regarded, award pieces, adult, but it just shows the market shift, I guess.
A Kubrickian filmography, once every couple of decades, he'll make a movie. Let's hope another one comes out soon. But this is just great. The thing I really noticed watching on Blu-ray this time was the sound design is really interesting. There's all these arguments that take place in different rooms and so many things that happen inside a house. And you just like, there's something about like the mics being hot. Like, there will be sound that you're hearing very clearly that's in another room. It doesn't sound muffled, like it's hidden behind a wall.
Yes.
And there's something about that that I just found so fascinating in how it feels like, it feels as though there's no place to keep secrets in a house like this or in a town like this. Just a small technique that really, really resonated with me, as well as what else is on the disc. I watched one of the special features that I think was such a fun, unique special feature called Defending in the Bedroom, which is an interview with actress Karen Allen, who has a small role in this film playing the defense attorney of William Mapplethorpe's character. Very, very small role. And it's an interesting behind the scenes piece, because she was originally approached by Todd Field in case they couldn't get Sissy Spacek to play one of the lead roles to play that character. And so that's kind of something you don't really hear about or really see. And for it to be like an actual in-depth, fairly in-depth interview, you know, 10 minutes long or something, about a small character played by a relatively significant actor and like their connection to the film. It's really, really worth watching if you get this disc, because you don't see something like that every day, which is quite frank discussion of, you know, being up for a leading role, not getting it, and then still wanting to be part of the movie because they believed in it so much to take a much, much, much smaller role.
That's amazing. I can't wait to check that out. I didn't see that on the disc. Another great audio commentary by the film critic of Australia, Adrian Martin as well. I'm keen to check that out as well. So very, very good. Well, it's time for our final film in this Imprint Companion. It's the kind of lead-off movie, the second Hayden Christensen in the batch. Take a listen to the trailer for Shattered Glass.
There are 16,800 magazines in this country, but only one calls itself the in-flight magazine of Air Force One. And that's the thrill of working at the New Republic. This kid, he hacked his way into a company called Juked Micronics and posted the salary of every Juked employee on Juked's website, saying the big bad bionic boy has been here, baby. I want a Miata. I want a trip to Disney World.
It's funny.
Why didn't you get this?
I don't know.
Do you have phone numbers for all your sources on the hack haven piece?
If somebody wants to do some kind of follow-up story.
I called all the hackers I know, asking if any had heard of a hacker by the name of Big Bad Bionic Boy. Nothing.
He's made some pretty serious charges.
This looks very suspicious to me.
I'm increasingly beginning to believe that I've been duped.
The New Republic's snobbiest rag in the business and gets completely snowed.
Have you thought about the impact this might have?
If you fire him, people will leave.
I go, Chuck, why didn't you back me up? He goes, I'm sorry, Steve. I gotta protect the magazine.
There are political considerations.
The young consumer
conservatives piece. Was that true?
This wasn't an isolated incident. He handed us fiction after fiction, and we printed them all as fact.
What you're telling me is impossible.
If he were a stranger to you, you'd dig and you'd bury him.
But there is one thing in the story that checks out.
What's that?
There does appear to be a state in the union named Nevada.
Hayden Christensen.
You're my editor. You're supposed to support me.
Peter Sarsgaard.
And this thing blows, there isn't going to be a magazine anymore.
I didn't do anything wrong. You saw my notes. Everything was in there.
They're going to have all this too.
I didn't do anything wrong.
I really wish you'd stop saying that.
Shattered glass.
I just want you to tell me the truth.
It's a worldwide first on Blu-ray for Shattered Glass, the real-life story of journalist Stephen Glass and the shocking scandal that rocked US publication The New Republic is brought to life by writer and director Billy Ray, the screenwriter behind Captain Phillips. Featuring an all-star cast including Hayden Christensen, Peter Sarsgaard, Chloe Savini, Rosario Dawson, Melanie Linsky, Hank Azaria, and Steve Zahn, Shattered Glass was critically acclaimed on release, nominated for a Golden Globe Award and 4 Independent Spirit Awards. A young journalist falls from grace when it's discovered he has fabricated over half the articles he has written for the publication of The New Republic magazine. And it's adapted from a 1998 Vanity Fair article of the same name by H.G. Bissinger. This is one of those films that I've been very keen to hear your thoughts on, Blake, because when I think about journalism films and people that love films about journalism, Mr. Blake Howard comes to mind. So what was it like either revisiting or seeing Shattered Glass for the first time?
I've seen it many times. I saw it and was devastated that I couldn't have a shot at writing something about it or doing something about it. It's one of those times we're very lucky that we are part of the Imprint Films family sort of adjacently. So we sometimes get a chance to contribute. And I saw this and I was like, this is one I would have loved to have a second crack at. I think this is an excellent and it's an excellent film and it's extremely well made. And I think that Billy Ray does a phenomenal job of establishing a center protagonist who is the empathy register of the movie, who you are completely behind in Hayden Christensen's Stephen Glass. You're with him. You see that he's like just such a raw nerve of talent, and the movie establishes him such a way. You see how all the people rally around him. You see his influence, his skills. You see all those things. And then it tilts the entire film on Peter Sarsgaard's absolutely sensational performance, like tilts the whole thing on its axis, and just shows you that he's a... and speaking of something that I thought, he's a fabulist. He's someone that you would be extremely familiar with, Alexi Toliopoulos, you too. So this is very much a you and I kind of movie, of me from the journalism angle, you from the fabulist angle, and your research is like, this guy is a true fabulist. And you start to see these things occur. And I just, it becomes as much about journalism and the practice of journalism and all those things that we relish, but then it has this absolutely sensational team up angle of Rosario Dawson and Steve Zahn's characters who start digging into this man and going through the facts and factoids of his articles and see that he is a fabulous. And then later on, like Stephen Glass himself writing a novel about being a fabulous. And it's just, I just love this movie. I think it's an excellent performance by Hayden Christensen because it goes from like charming and sweet and like, and you see all those things that people like rally around him and love him and care for him and nurture him. And if you've ever worked in big teams and big offices in corporate worlds or teams in, you know, you could be on a building site or in a factory, I don't care. There's usually someone in the team that's like, you know, might be talented and sweet. They need a little bit of extra nurturing and TLC. And you find that the team like rallies around them to help them. It's just one of those things. It's like that, you know, the weakest link in the chain is someone who can let the team down. So the team rallies around people to help them and make them better. And he's kind of this weird thing. He's a weird nexus between a star and that kind of like person. And so people help him and they entertain him. And then you watch how malevolent some of that stuff is and manipulative, and I eat this movie up. I love it, and Hayden Christensen does an exceptionally great performance in a horrendously thankless role to be like the hero that gets unmasked as the villain, strangely enough, as Revenge of the Sith is out in theaters. But I think this is a magnificent performance. 2003, it's right off the back of Revenge of the Sith, you know, like pretty much, and he goes into this role and I think it's excellent. I think it's truly probably his best performance top to bottom. And it was one of those ones for Peter Sarsgaard where you're just like, this guy's amazing. He's just an absolutely incredible actor. Everyone is great. Hank Azaria does a great supporting performance. I forgot how great he was in this movie. It's just great. It's an excellent, excellent, excellent movie about a fabulist, and shows you, I think it does such a great way of showing you how these people can integrate themselves in a community of people that care about them and they're trying to protect them. And then it just shows you how profound the betrayal can be. And I think that it resonates with me every time. It's a masterful movie. And I'm so glad that it's a worldwide first on Blu-ray. It deserves it, because if that gets it back in the conversation of great journalism movies, which during both Zodiac Chronicle and all the President's Minutes 2 podcasts on the One Heat Minute Productions network, like, this movie got mentioned a lot of times as a movie that was a quintessential journalism movie. If I was programming a journalism batch, it would be there, because it's, you know, you can't always have these. Not every movie is about, you know, All the President's Men or The Insider or Zodiac. There are these darker tales that are in there. And this is a magnificent one.
I'm a little bit less hot on it than you are, Blake, but I do think, as a showcase for Hayden Christensen's talent, especially it landing in between his two Star Wars films, I think it's a shame to see him not get to have a chance to do more things like this, because it's like Blake says, it's such a great weaving of innocence and malevolence, naivete, and more sinister type things for whatever gain it is that he's after. I think my main things that are like drawbacks from this film have nothing to do with the cast, because the cast is stellar. It's probably more in the writing and this wraparound story that there is on like either end, like the bookend story that I just like, or the bookend presentation rather. Let's go, just put me in the shit of it, mate. We don't need to go retrospective on, just get me in there, because all the stuff in that present tense journalistic sense feels so like vibrant, it feels so fresh. But I think this is a really, really great journalism film that if you have not seen and you have your interest in like the movies that Blake already called out, like All the President's Men and stuff, this is one to really tuck into, and I think you'll be feasting on it, especially from that kind of like that 90s, early 2000s view on journalism. I think it's really worth seeing something that's on the precipice of online.
Cusp. Yeah.
On the cusp of online journalism. I think that's the key. I think that's why this film will, you know, as time goes on, could be really rediscovered as a bit of a forgotten classic in that period setting sense.
Yes. A great one. A really great one. Guys, thank you so much to this Imprint March batch episode of the Imprint Companion. Thank you guys all for continuing to support us and going along the way. Make sure you like, subscribe, and share the show and share your reactions to it. And if you have any other shout outs or have any thoughts on what we said, please send them along to both myself at One Blake Minute or This Is Alexi across a bunch of different socials. The next batch, I believe that we have, Lex, I'm just going to bring it up for us to talk about.
It is a big April batch. Big. Lots of stuff in this.
There's so much stuff. It's got It Came from Outer Space, which is a 4K, a 3D Blu-ray as well in that special collection for those of us who may have 3D TVs anymore or have that capability. Flesh and Fantasy and Dead of Night double feature. Tales of Adventure, which is Collection 5 and Collection 6. It's a big double batch. Bride of Vengeance and then Ivy. So an absolutely massive one. Lots of 40s, 50s classics there. So plenty to dig into.
I would say that if you are hearing this and you go, maybe I'll just get one thing from next batch, I'm going to give a big recommendation to Flesh and Fantasy and Dead of Night. I am a big fan of anthology genre horror type films, and both of those are worthy of just instant purchase if you like that kind of stuff.
Great. Love that as an early recommend. We will be back to talk about that one soon. Lex, do you have anything to plug besides your great show, The Last Video Store, or I believe Refuse Classification, your current show with Zach Ruane from the Auntie Donna team is sold out right now across Sydney shows.
It's sold out in Sydney right now. It's sold out in Brisbane, and I think it's probably sold out in Perth as well. But we are doing encores in Sydney in July at the Darling Quarter Theatre. So though tickets are on sale now, so you can pick up tickets to go see in July. Hopefully we'll do some more encores around the place, and we're doing Canberra in July as well. So Canberra, maybe there'll be some more encores, and if we're in Brisbane and Perth, we might add a couple of extra tickets. So just keep refreshing the page for the next week or so.
All right. Well, this episode is going to be dropping hot. Lex, thank you so much. Guys, if you want to check out everything that's happening on One Heat Minute Productions, we have the Great Decade Project, which is kicking along on Patreon, which it costs you $1 a month. You can listen to it on our Patreon. We've got Romin, which is our great series on John Frankenheimer's Ronin, which is coming to a conclusion. We're 8 episodes into a 12-episode series there, so go and check those out and catch up. We've got The Guide for the Film Fanatic, hosted by film historian Jason Bailey, which is amazing. Go check that out. Great guests, great films. And coming later in May is our new series, The Minsider, 20 episodes on Michael Mann's The Insider. Every one of them produced like an episode of 60 Minutes. I hope you enjoy those when they come out. And if you want to join us for our One Heat Minute Productions brand new film club, we have got a film club now where we're having a monthly theme where we're going through. The first monthly theme is Heat Caliber. And the first series of films that have been selected are Widows, The Town, Le Cirque Rouge, Infernal Affairs, and a bonus selection of Bullet. If you join One Heat Minute Productions Patreon, you can be firstly a person who can call into our monthly podcast about the films that we watch over the month. And secondly, a special jury member, another tier of it, is to be on the jury. So the jury and I have selected this month's, soon to announce June, but it's Heat Caliber this month. And this week, the first film of our film club is Widows. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Lex. And we'll catch you on another Imprint Companion very soon.
Thank you, Blake. See you soon.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.